Morning.
Good morning.
Didn't snow that much this morning after all. So this morning I'm going to talk about the tetralemma in Mahayana. That's, I know, a big word, but we practiced the tetralemma in a class I taught this summer. Basically, what the tetralemma means is the complementary relationship between all views of reality, all views of life. Usually we're stuck in one dimension, right? Whether it be pain in the body, or some feeling we have, or some thought, or some opinion, we're stuck in one dimension. The tetralemma is meant to open us up to four dimensions, and then beyond that to infinite dimensions. So a synonym for the tetralemma could be panoramic awareness, which is a term that Tibetans use a lot, panoramic awareness. So the tetralemma has four parts to it. I'm suffering. For instance, I'm just using suffering as an example. I'm suffering. I'm suffering right now from a back problem. I'm suffering. I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering because I'm happy to be here with you guys. I'm suffering and I'm not suffering. I'm both suffering and I'm not suffering. I'm neither suffering nor I'm not suffering. That's the tetralemma, the four parts. You can do it with anything. I'm annoyed. I'm angry. I'm not angry. I'm both angry and not angry. I'm neither angry nor not angry. Panoramic awareness. Panoramic awareness is a synonym. So I spent the first 4 years of my life living at the top of Panoramic Way in Berkeley. Panoramic Way. And of course, I didn't know anything about this stuff. We live way at the top of Panoramic Way. So we had no neighbors, and there were no little kids around. And there was my sister, but she didn't count as a kid. She was just a difficult baby who was always taking my parents' attention. So I was lonely. First dimension. I'm lonely. I was lonely. Oh. And since I was lonely, I developed imaginary friends. I hung out with imaginary friends. My main imaginary friends were Bobby Shafto, Gilson, Paris, and President. My main man was Bobby Shafto. My main man. Mother Goose, right? Bobby Shafto's gone to sea. He'll come back to marry me. He's my love forevermore. Pretty Bobby Shafto. Bobby Shafto's fat and fair, combing down his golden hair. In my nursery rhyme book, he had really long golden hair. He's my love forevermore, pretty Bobby Shafto. So since I was lonely, I hung out with him. He was a good bud, a good bud. And although we lived on Panoramic Way, I never got to see the vista overlooking Berkeley and San Francisco and the water, and because my parents said I was too young to go down there. And I don't know why they didn't take me down there. But you know, I've never been a rule follower, and I started off as not a rule follower. So as soon as my parents told me at 4, I was too young to go down there, I determined I was get down there. And I got down there one morning when that little baby girl who was in my family, who had come, I don't know where she came from. She disturbed everything. She was occupying my parents' time. So I snuck off down the path to see the vista. Of course, with Bobby. Bobby and I did everything together. Me and Bobby Shafto, right? Not me and Bobby McGee, me and Bobby Shafto. So we went down there, and it didn't take very long to get there. And when we got there, we saw the vista. And when I saw the vista, Bobby Shafto disappeared because I was just taken with the vista. I was not lonely anymore. I saw the hills. I saw the California poppies, the yellow poppies. I saw the Indian paintbrush. This is one of these memories that's sort of in me. You guys may have 4-year-old memories that are in you. It's just in me. I can still see those flowers. I saw the rock outcroppings. I saw the bay going on, and then behind it the ocean going on, and then the sky. And it was not lonely. So I moved from the first dimension to the second dimension in my 4-year-old being, not even knowing about dimensions, from I'm lonely to I'm not lonely. And so I didn't even need Bobby. And my parents never knew that I went there because I knew I'd get in trouble. But I felt so joined to life in my 4-year-old kind of enlightenment experience that I was safe. I just was safe, and the whole world was there supporting me. So then many years later, when I was in college on the West Coast, when I was about 20, I was having a hard time in college, not liking being there. And I'd depressed, and I remember in those days, you didn't talk about being depressed, but you could go to a psychiatrist and get on meds, and a psychiatrist wanted to put me on meds, but I didn't want to do that either. But then I started reading books, and I've talked about this sometimes before, on Eastern spirituality, and it was fascinating. And I read a book that had a section on Tibetan spirituality, and it mentioned panoramic awareness. And I thought, wow. And then I remembered Panoramic Way. So I thought, oh, I'm going to drive up there. It'll only take me an hour. I'm going to drive up there. So I got in my car, and I drove up to Panoramic Way, and I hadn't been there for years. It was there. The whole thing was there. But I wasn't able to settle in and open up beyond the first dimension, because I was so kind of in my head about not being okay, not liking being in college, what my father was going to do to me if I dropped out of college. And so although I did it, I wasn't really able to move beyond the first dimension. But then I began practicing meditation, practicing Zen meditation. And with my teacher, Suzuki Roshi, and I practiced steadily for a couple of years. And one day I was doing in a retreat in San Francisco, and I don't know how many day retreat, but a few day retreat, and I looked across the meditation hall at him when we got up from meditation, and I looked in his eyes, and there was just deep spaciousness there. Deep kindness and multi-dimensional panorama of all life there. So that was wonderful. That was wonderful. So that time I was suffering in my body from sitting. I went through a period at the beginning of my sitting where I suffered in my body a lot from sitting. Then for years I didn't suffer from sitting, and now I'm suffering from sitting again. So, you know, there you go. There you go. So I was suffering from sitting. I was suffering, and yet I was not suffering. Third part of the tetralemma. I was not suffering because I was feeling that spaciousness and that interconnectedness with everything. At the same time, I was suffering, and I was doing both those. I was doing both of those. Yeah, what are we going to do to kind of get this to work better. Okay, thanks. So, moving beyond a single dimension, which many of us spend most of our lives living in, is what Suzuki calls fading away into emptiness. Can feel like being at your mother's bosom, and we feel like she is taking care of us. Fading away into emptiness can be like feeling like we're at our mother's bosom and she is taking care of us. It's wonderful, isn't it? That's wonderful.
Put the stem of your glasses over it. Yes.
I've never had this before. It's always worked before. Okay.
Try putting the stem of your glasses over it.
The stem of my glasses over it.
Yeah.
That okay. That better?
No.
Huh? Now put this down?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. So moving beyond a single dimension really is what Zen practice is all about, the potential of moving beyond a single dimension. Our life is pretty flat when we're in a single dimension. But we have that potential. We all have that potential. So a couple of years after my experience in San Francisco, I was at the Zen monastery, Tassajara Monastery in Carmel Valley, living for a few months. And I was in a retreat there, and I was having a hard time. And so my teacher saw that I was having a hard time, and when I went in to have a one-to-one with him, he said, "Well, I think you should repeat this mantra to yourself. I thought, "What? We don't do mantras in Zen. You've got the wrong religion." But I didn't say that to him, of course. I said, "Oh, yes. What should I do, Sensei?" Well, he said, "Repeat Gate, Gate." That's from the Heart Sutra. Repeat that. Since you're having a hard time, if you repeat that, it might help you over and over again. Gate, Gate, Para, Gate, Para, Sam, Gate. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond. Gone beyond a single dimension, right? Gone beyond the single dimension that we get caught on and that really flattens our lives, that we miss this huge spaciousness that's always here. So I was repeating that maybe for a couple days, I don't know. And then I had an experience of just cracking open. I went beyond I am suffering. I went beyond I am not suffering. I went beyond I am both suffering and not suffering. I am neither suffering nor not suffering. Into boundarylessness. What we call emptiness in Zen, but for Westerners, a better translation is probably boundarylessness, because emptiness has all of those negative connotations in English. Boundaryless. No I to suffer. Just this. And yet, it's important to remember that boundaries are important within this life. All the dimensions are important. So we don't want to diss any of the dimensions. The reality of my injured back right now, that's the primary dimension, the first dimension. I need to take care of that dimension. I need to take care of that dimension. A lot of people I've seen at Zen Center over the years, they're always wanting to, when they hear panoramic awareness or big awareness, that's what they're wanting, and move beyond boundaries, boundarylessness. But I spend much more time here counseling people, helping people create boundaries for themselves and learn to have boundaries than I do on the other, because that's what people seem to need in this culture at this time, because people get so sort of taken by other people's emotions and feel so responsible for taking care of them. And that kind of boundarylessness is not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about spacious boundarylessness in which you honor boundaries too. You need to honor them. So then I moved to from there, from San Francisco area to northern Minnesota, which is an interesting story in and of itself with my wife and young child. And I kept my meditation going, and I kept with me a few expressions that kind of supported me. And one of the expressions was an expression by my teacher, to get a letter from emptiness is to get a letter from home. To get a letter from emptiness is to get a letter from home. So these teachings that we value are helping us, or reminding us we have a home here in multidimensionality. That's our home, right here, not somewhere else, right here. And I use the Gate mantra as my primary letter from home, because my teacher had said, do this, and, you know, then I died to the small self or something. I don't know what happened. All I know was that it was cool, and it never left me. Still hasn't left. So I would use the Gate to come back when I was feeling a little bit distressed or lonely in northern Minnesota or upset. I would use that. That was my letter. Then, this turns out to be an autobiographical talk. I hadn't planned that, but this is the first 10 or 15 years of my meditation practice, you know, autobiographical. So a couple of years later, I was still living in northern Minnesota, and I sent my teacher a letter in San Francisco. My teacher had, when I was with him, he was not well known. He was, you know, this thing has come off again. When I was with him, he was not well known. Probably on a Sunday we would have about this many people here. But by the time I was living in northern Minnesota, his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, had just come out, and he was getting to be famous. But I sent him a letter, and he sent me a letter back, a short letter. And in the letter he said something about what he was doing and his book coming out. And then he said, even if I forget your name, I will never forget you. Oh, that was a wonderful letter from home for me. A wonderful letter. Your home never forgets you. Your home is always here. You may go to and fro and up and down and in and out, and if you feel like you're crazy or you're chemically dependent, but your home never forgets you. It's always here. So little Tim, when he opened that letter, felt that he'd abandoned his teacher and moved from San Francisco to the frozen north, the frozen tundra, for what? And he felt sad. That's the first dimension. We shouldn't diss the first dimension. Sad is good. Just to feel sad when we're sad. But adult Tim realized that letter was calling me to my real home, where I'm always safe and protected. You're always safe and protected and right here in your real home. Don't take my word for it. Experience it through this practice, through this meditation practice. So sadness that I was feeling, as the other emotions, it exists, it does not exist, it both exists and does not exist, it neither exists nor does not exist. Moving beyond fixation on any one dimension and appreciating all of them. And again, my teacher said, emptiness can feel like being in our mother's bosom, and we feel like she was taking care of us, is taking care of us. Dogen calls this grandma mind. Grandma mind. I've talked a lot about this. It's not my theme today, but maybe some of you were lucky to have a grandma who just didn't judge you, who just was there for you. Or maybe a friend had a, if you didn't, weren't that lucky, you had a friend who had a grandma like that. Dogen must have had a grandma like that because he talks a lot about grandma mind. So a couple of years ago, when I was doing a book tour for my second book, I was back in Berkeley giving a talk at the bookstore my mother took me to when I was 4 years old. It has a little kids section there. And I thought, well, I'm going to go up Panoramic Way. Check it out. So why not? So I drove up. I had a rental car. I drove up Panoramic Way, and it's all shishi now. It's all shishi, meaning gazillion-dollar houses on the rock croppings and one after another. It's still beautiful, and it still has a beautiful view, but Silicon Valley has taken it over. So it seemed like that, at least. But I was able to find that general area where I had been before. But there were huge houses, Frank Lloyd Wright houses, huge, just sort of sticking out over the rock croppings, like they were. But I found a couple of rocks and those rock croppings, and I brought those rocks home to put on my altar, and they're on my altar right now. I brought one down right now. They're just rocks. Just rocks. Here's one on my altar. This one has a little meditator sitting on this rock. Sometimes this meditator falls over, like sometimes I fall over, and I put the meditator back on the rock. So these rocks, letters from home. Letters from home. They remind me of the stillness and the interconnectedness right here, within the rock, within us, within the rock. For the Lakota people, and many of you know that I spent time working with a Lakota spiritual teacher, for the Lakota people, rocks are specifically considered letters from home because there's the term Tunkashala in Lakota. Tunka means rock. Great spirit, Tunkashala. Great spirit, Tunkashala. Rock. Rock. And the Lakota elders say, within a rock are the energies and wisdom of all life. Everything that has transpired in physical form to bring us to this place now. Multiple dimensions, right? Can't say they're just one dimension, two dimensions, three dimensions, four dimensions, 83,000 dimensions. Rock. Our rock nature, our still nature, which is resilient and open. It still is sad and still gets angry because we're human. It's part of being a rock, a rock human, a human rock. It shows its wear and tear. It shows its what it's been through, the streams that have washed over it and then have hurt it and then have struggled against it, shows them it's just what it is, right? It's just what it is. So my daughter, when she was, about 4 years old, like about the age that Bobby Shafto and I hung out together, my daughter hung out with rocks. And we lived on Fremont, about four blocks from here, where we still live. I guess we lived on Emerson now, then, five blocks from here. And she would go down to the lake with me and collect rocks. And we would collect rocks for her, and she would bring them to her bedroom and put them on her windowsill. And she would also collect things that her older brother scoffed at, like, her older brother said once when we brought a rock home, he said, Aaron, that's just a piece of cement. You're not going to put that on your windowsill, are you? She said, Jed, it's beautiful. Jed, it's beautiful. She hasn't lost her beginner's mind yet, right? She hadn't lost it yet. Jed had already lost his beginner's mind at six. She hadn't lost it at four. And then every night when I would kiss her goodnight before she went to sleep, she said, "Dad, let's look at rocks before you leave." And she put, since her brother thought the cement lock was the worst one, she had it at the center. It was her centerpiece, the cement rock. So rock. This rock is a rock, but it's not a rock. It's both a rock and not a rock. It's neither a rock nor not a rock. It is. It's got all these in it, all these things in it, all these elements. And the Lakotas sometimes translate Great Spirit, Tunkashla, Grandfather Rock, as God. But they don't always translate as God. They give different translations. But what's the Buddhist attitude? There is God. There is no God. There is both God and no God. There is neither God nor no God. Multidimensional, right? Panoramic spaciousness and openness. So we can enjoy our lives. We can enjoy them. We don't have to do all these deals that we do to get all tangled up. And when we do them, that's part of it too. That's part of it too. It's just part of being human. So, I'm going to end with a story about another personal story that goes way, way back in my life. And that means way, way back because my life is old now. This story is from probably about, 65, 70 years ago. So I'm with my grandmother in my backyard in my hometown of Palo Alto. And my name is Timothy. And I'm named after my grandfather, Timothy. My grandfather had no sons. And when my mother was pregnant, they're pretty prejudiced against women, I'm sorry. They were, especially those Irish people back then. They were so glad that they got a son. So I got named after my grandfather, Timothy. And he got named after his father, Timothy. And he got named after his father, Timothy. So my great-great-grandfather, Timothy. So my grandma said to me, my Irish grandma said to me when we were in the backyard, she said, "Well, you know the meaning of your name, dear, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, it's Timothy." She said, "No, your parents haven't told you the meaning of your name? Your mother hasn't told you the meaning of your name?" She said, "Dear, it was your grandfather's name. It was your great-grandfather's name. It was your great-grandfather." I said, "I know all that stuff, Grandma, but it's just Timothy." She said, "Dear, it's Timotheos. It's honor God. Your mother hasn't told you, but that's what it is." And I said, "But Grandma, we're Unitarians." Grandma didn't like that we were Unitarians at all. I said, "Grandma, we're Unitarians. We don't even believe in God." And my grandma took a breath and then she said, "Well, that's all right, dear. Just honor the God that's in front of you. Just honor the God that's in front of you." So we can do that, can't we? Honor the God that's within us, that's in front of us. And then we have pretty spacious awareness, and we feel at home. We feel at home. So again, my teacher, emptiness can feel like being at our mother's bosom and we feel like she's taking care of us. So that's what I want to say. That covers the first half of my life it doesn't cover it, but, from a kind of a spiritual thing is in my first half of my life. So I'll be glad to take questions or comments, or maybe you have Mother Goose rhymes you'd like to recite. Maybe you'd like to hear Bobby Shafto again. And, somehow I kept that book, that nursery rhyme book, and I had it. We took it to Minnesota with us, and we were starting to grow our hair long in the '60s. Well, Bobby Shafter, what would that have been? The 20s or the 10s. He had hair down below his shoulders, beautiful golden hair below his shoulders. Only cycles, right? Multidimensionality, cycles. Comments, questions? Can you remember the word? What's the big word for today?
Tetralemma.
Ah, Tetralemma. Are you sure you're a smart Buddhist? Tetralemma. Started by Nagarjuna, who actually, the negation of the negation of the negation. And then the Huayan people who said, well, let's not just negate everything, let's affirm everything. That's even better than negating everything. So then the affirmation of the affirmation of the affirmation. The same. One is cleaning us out so we can experience the wonder of just being with a common, ordinary piece of cement on our altar, in the center, the centerpiece of our altar. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the last two pieces that I'm, thinking about. You know, it's all of these things and it's none of these things, right?
Yeah. So, okay, so first, let's see. So you get that, you get, I am sad, and then I'm not sad. But can we carry both being sad and not being sad at the same time? Can we carry both being angry and not angry at the same time? We have that capacity to carry those, so that we're not just dominated by one. We don't need it. We don't want to kick off the sadness or the anger because it's there, but we can do those both and. Both and. That happens through our meditation. We realize that we can do both and. That it does itself. We don't do it so much as it does itself. Although in the class that I led, I had everybody take different, had them do it spatially. So first they would do, I am not suffering, or I am not sad. They got to choose something they had a problem with. I am suffering, I am sad, and then they moved to I am not. And then they moved again to I'm both, because we are both. We're multiplicity. And then they moved to I am neither nor. Neither nor means that we're not caught by dividing things up. We're not caught by any division. We're neither nor. We're just here. I mean, a rock is just here. It's just here. It doesn't know anything about multidimensionality. If I throw it at you, you know, you throw it at me, there's nothing. Doesn't, because it doesn't, it's just here, it's just alive. So that's the fourth one, just alive. Because we're not trying to have any dimensions, just here. And the third one is balancing. Having enough spaciousness so we can balance, make room for both the sadness and just being calmly and openly with the sadness, without being tossed away by it. Being calmly and openly with the anger without being tossed away by it. Deb?
This tetralemma seems to be useful when we kind of over-label ourselves or someone else, just to kind of unlabel. Like, I'm an angry person.
Yeah.
Not an angry person.
Yeah, that's right.
Just when it seems to be, and it seems also to undo the dualistic.
That's right. That's the intention of it. Yeah. So it developed when this guy Nagarjuna, who was this Buddhist sage, people would come to him and they'd have a specific view of the world, and he would just say that view is not true. That view is not true, and then he'd go through everything that what you say is not true, and it's also not both true, and he would just go through the whole thing. So, and reading Nagarjuna, I find a little boring actually, because all he does is all Buddhist meditators like come to him, and he just discounts every view they have because he sees that they're stuck on it. No. But then, again, a few hundred years later, we have the Huayan movement developing in China, which says that all views are cool. As long as you don't get stuck on them, all views are cool, both and. So it takes the tetralemma and reverses it. So it's still a tetralemma, but it's everything that's here, everything that's alive, we can honor. We can honor because it is. We don't have to segment it, fragment it within our consciousness.
Question.
Yeah.
Do Buddhists believe that there's an objective truth?
Do Buddhists believe that there's an objective truth? Sure, there's an objective truth. That's the first dimension. First dimension is very important. Very important. Science is very important. Because of science, you guys are all here now. I just have to sit by myself every day, but now because of, I'm being a little facetious, but because of all the brain science that's been done, validating the legitimacy of meditation, everybody, many, many people are practicing now who wouldn't have. So that's the first dimension. That first dimension is important. But it's just one dimension. Just one dimension. Yeah, Dennis.
I was really moved by your last story about your grandmother.
Ah.
which is very, very cool. And part of the reason that touches me like it does, I did not grow up in the Bay Area. I grew up in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
It was different. If you were stupid enough or bold enough to admit to someone that you did not believe in God, it got beat into you until that thought left your body. And then you fell back into line and you went to church and did your things. When I hear your stories like that, it brings up some level of envy within me that you were fortunate enough
I see.
To be in such an environment surrounded by such people.
I get that. I completely get that. And what it reminds me of is being at Stanford and everybody was envious of me and I just felt awful. I felt depressed. I felt discouraged. I felt out of sync. That's when I went up to Panoramic Way the first time, and because of my depression, I didn't see the life in the rocks. Oh, that's just a memory. Just a memory. But memories are good. Because of memories, you know, we have conversations like this. Anything more? Thank you.